AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Do you remember what you used to do on Columbus Day? I do. But today's price action probably wouldn't have heated up the fax machines at the FSA office. And it's Indigenous Peoples Day. The government is closed, but the only way you'll probably figure that out is when you go to the mailbox.
Live from Columbo Day.
Oh, wait, let me see here. Where's my glasses?
Columbus. Columbus Day via Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. Then it's on to Todd Wilkinson, the vice president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And right after the news, Kirk Hins from BAM WX with a weather update. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, Davis, happy Columbus Day. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
Indigenous Peoples Day as well. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah. So here's the deal. It's one of those rare government holidays when the government is shut down, but the markets are still open. Okay. So back in the day of LDPs, loan deficiency payments, the old safety net under the farm bill, this was a day when the market was open. And if it was open and the market went down sharply, I had that wrong. If the market rallied sharply, you would want to send in your LDP, claim your LDP, because you wanted to pick it. You wanted to claim the LDP at the low. Well,
sure.
It's always based on the previous days. Okay, so you could get a day's worth of price action, and if you'd get a strong rally, yeah, maybe you pick, you claim the LDP. But if you got 2 days of higher prices that you could claim the LDP, the FSA office would be filled with fax paper when they showed up on Tuesday morning waiting for the from people that were claiming the LDPs. It became a thing there for a while to claim the LDP on Columbus Day. All right, it's a little cool, a little rainy out there today, man.
A little chilly. It was raining earlier. Muted sunshine now, although it's sort of fading to an autumnal gray type of thing outside the window.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that for most of the day after that. Boy, some rough weather down in Oklahoma last night. We'll get the details from Kirk Hins and find out where the risks are for today. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, we got to start with energies. Crude oil prices have risen 64% this year to a 7-year high. Natural gas prices have roughly doubled over the past 6 months to a 7-year high. Heating oil has risen 68% this year. Hello, farm diesel. Prices at the gasoline pump are up nearly over a dollar over the past 12 months to a national average of just over $3 a gallon. Coal prices are at records. Higher energy prices could push up inflation in coming months, dampen consumer spending on other products and services, and ultimately slow the U.S. recovery, according to analysts. Meanwhile, after a quiet summer, lumber prices are increasing again. Prices have jumped 50% since mid-August. As inflation has steadily persisted and home prices have continued higher, Chip.
Yeah, and the home building continues. Even when prices were super high, it may have slowed things down a touch, but the houses were still going up.
Well, global supply chain delays are so severe that some of the biggest U.S. retailers are chartering their own cargo ships to import goods. Port delays, COVID-19 outbreaks, and worker shortages have snarled the flow of products between Asia and North America, threatening the supplies of everything from holiday decorations and toys to appliances and furniture. Excuse me. Walmart, Home Depot, Costco, and Target are among the companies that are paying for their own chartered ships as part of wider plans to mitigate the disruptions, although smaller retailers just really can't afford that, Chip,
no,
is the thing.
No way. No way can they afford an empty backhaul to China.
Right.
That's not going to happen. And I can't imagine that even Walmart, Home Depot, Costco, and Target are going to do it for very long.
No, I wouldn't think.
No.
Well, Senator Bernie Sanders said he is holding firm on the $3.5 trillion education, healthcare, childcare, and climate plan, While two centrists try to lower the cost and Democratic liberals acknowledge they need to accept less to get the legislation passed. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He held discussions via video Friday evening in which the officials acknowledged the importance of the bilateral trade relationship between the U.S. and China. The two discussed the Phase 1 agreement reached between the U.S. and China and agreed that the two sides would consult on certain outstanding issues. Taiwan faces unprecedented challenges and will defend its sovereignty, President Tsai Ing-wen said, pushing back after Chinese President Xi Jinping declared that unification with Taiwan, quote, will and must be achieved. The remarks come amid increasing tensions in the region, exacerbated by repeated incursions into Taiwan's air defense identification zone by Chinese planes, and the recent revelation that U.S. troops have been training Taiwanese forces for at least a year, Chip.
Yeah, no potential tensions there at all, huh?
Right. It's just flat tension. It's tension.
Oh, this is the need to have that relationship with China is absolutely, positively a must.
Mm-hmm.
But there is going to be we're going to see some stress on that relationship over the next 12 months. I just don't think there's any question about it.
Well, finally, a U.S. delegation met with representatives of the Taliban in Doha, Qatar this weekend. It was the first such meeting since the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. The parties discussed the continued safe passage of Americans and allies from Afghanistan and the facilitation of humanitarian aid. Meanwhile, a severe drought in Afghanistan is compounding the country's economic crisis. The scarcity of water is slashing farmers' incomes and driving up food bills for people all over the place. Could impact 9 million Afghans, according to the UN. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Kirk Hinz, BAMWX.com. How are you, Kirk?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
We're doing okay. Boy, it was a rough night in parts of Oklahoma. Where's the risk for severe weather today?
Yeah, we had about 15 tornado reports down there, like you mentioned yesterday. And then the threat today extends, I would say, especially across portions of Illinois, southern Wisconsin, western Indiana, and into Michigan here. Now, not as big of a threat, I would say, as tornadoes as yesterday. Still on the table, I would say wind and hail are going to be the risks here, I would say, especially for Illinois and southern Wisconsin as we go throughout the afternoon into the evening hours for sure. So keep an eye on the skies if you're in those areas.
There is nobody with standing corn that wants to hear that, Kirk.
You're
nobody.
Not wrong about that. You are not
man,
wrong.
Man, oh, man, that we don't need. What about the rest of the week?
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll have another kind of impactful low-pressure system across the central United States into the middle part of the week there. After that, the good news is as we go deeper into the week, the weekend, next week, I think many locations will be completely dry. So as long as we can get, you know, safely through this middle part of the week system, I think, you know, we'll see all systems go for Harvest 21 with very little precipitation, actually, in the whole entire central U.S. So today and then in the middle part of the week, and then I think we're going to be drying out.
Okay. Temperatures next week a little cooler?
Yep. Yes, definitely cooler in the 5 to 10 day. I don't think anything substantial. There are a couple impactful fronts in there. And then as we get in the 10 to 15 day, it's switching up 180 degrees once again, and it's going to turn warmer than normal. So I would say overall, outside of the 5 to 10, we're going to be warmer than normal ahead.
Okay, boy, that's good news with energy prices where they're at right now.
Absolutely.
The longer we can delay the start of the heating season, the mm-hmm. better. Kirk, we're going to talk with you and Michael tomorrow. Full segment, and we'll dig into this a lot deeper, all right?
Awesome, sir. We look forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much. That is Kirk Hinz, BAMWX.com. We got Greg Peterson up next.
On your farm, achieving better yields is always the goal, but replacing current equipment with new isn't always an option. Bring new life and new technology to your current equipment with a John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit. It all starts at your local John Deere dealer. Schedule an inspection today to see how a customizable performance upgrade kit from John Deere can unlock the potential of your existing equipment. Search John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit to learn more.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us as we get this week started here on AgriTalk. Davis Michelson is along for the ride as well.
Good morning, everybody.
Yeah, we're going to have a conversation with Kirk Hens and Michael Clark from BAMWX tomorrow morning, I believe in this segment. And
timely.
We will
timely.
Dig, yeah, we will dig into the harvest weather a little bit further. And we'll also get an update on what's going on down in Brazil with the planting conditions down there. They've made some pretty remarkable progress in areas of Brazil in getting that bean crop in the ground. Okay, let's bring in Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, Chip, how you doing?
We're doing real good. I love this for the pick of the week. This is a really cool one. What do you got?
Yeah, I thought you might enjoy this one. It was a sale last Thursday. Our good friends at Sullivan Auctioneers. It was a farm estate auction online sale out of Dallas Center, Iowa. Had a pair of John Deere 4840s. Of course, classic model there. Very nice, but boy, did they sell strong. One was an 81 model, 5,661 hours. That went for $30,500. Yep. And the other one was a 79 model with 7,082 hours, and that came in right on its heels at 29.5.
Man.
So I blogged about it last Thursday, and I mean, that's the third and fourth highest auction price on a 4840 that I've seen the past 10 years. And interestingly, the average auction price, I got poking around in our machinerypete.com data there, and it's up 21% this year. Average price at $16,339, up from $13,498 last year. So when these nice ones do show up, and it doesn't matter the color,
right?
You know, good condition used tractors, they're just soaring higher and higher. And yeah. If you're curious, folks, the highest auction price on a 4840 the past 10 years, my good friend Tom Schramm sold it back December 7th of 19 in Crescent, Iowa. That was an 81 model, 5,830 hours. And he had given me a heads up about 6 months out saying, Pete, this is the most original one-owner 4840 you're ever going to see. And that brought 38.5. So yeah. When they're like that, they're just worth more money these days.
Yeah. Okay. So it's up 21%.
Yep.
Now, is that representative of equipment in general over a year ago?
Well, I was just asked this morning, Chip. One of our readers in Farm Journal sent me a note and said, Pete, what would you say, you know, generally speaking for used row crop tractors, how much should I up in value this year? And 21% can sound shocking. That would be a little higher than across the board, but 10% conservatively. And then when you drift into certain models, like these older models, you know, like a Magnum 7140 or a Deere 40 series. And then when they're in good condition, then, you know, we're seeing those, like I say, 21% up. But again, used values, they're just up this year across the board.
That's a,
Big jump.
Oh, it's a big jump. Now, if we hadn't seen some energy prices double or up by a minimum of a third, if we hadn't seen cotton do what it's done, if we hadn't seen, quite frankly, corn and soybeans do what they've done over the course of the last year, I might look at this and say, this is unbelievable. But in reality, in the world of agriculture, it kind of makes, I mean, it's keeping pace.
Well, it is, and I can give you another example. We'll talk more about this particular auction in a minute here, but it was a sale last Thursday. It was a consignment auction out of Michigan by good folks at Schrader Real Estate and Auction. And on the sale were a pair of grain trailers, 2013 Wilson 42-foot. Very nice, and there's almost nothing hotter right now than a good used grain trailer because on the one hand, I don't know that you can even get one new if you want to.
Right.
And the inventory of used ones is, I mean, nil. Right. So one of these went for 47.5 and the other for 46.5. Keep in mind, they're almost 9 years old. And I got looking again, folks, go to our website, machinerypete.com, click on auction prices. You got 21 years worth of numbers there. Those are the two highest auction prices ever on a Wilson 42 foot. Same day last week, again, 13 models. 47.5, 46.5. So just the way it is right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And The availability is, is got everybody kind of freaked out. And I know that you were on this early, Greg, and but it it does. It's got everybody freaked out. The it's not just a do I need it? It's a will I be able to get one?
Yeah, I mean, when it gets to the point of being problematic for a farm equipment dealer to let something go off their use lot, that's where we're at right now. So one anecdotal thing is we're seeing dealers pile into the auction market looking to be buyers just for inventory's sake.
For inventory.
So that's why I said, back in February and March, if you need it, get it. Don't worry about what it costs. Yep. Just get it. So
just get it. Okay, let's go over to Ohio, Big Prairie. There were some tractors sold and a pickup. I want to hear about this.
Yeah, nice sale Saturday, my friends at RES Auction Services. Not a huge sale, but just a couple highlight items. They had a 07 John Deere 7420 mechanical front, 3,260 hours, no loader. That brought 70, good solid price there. And then here's another one for this discussion we're just having. I mean, a 1982 John Deere 4440, 8,520 hours, engine overhaul at 8,000 hour mark, and it brought 29.5.
Wow.
So, I mean, you're scraping 30,000 bucks for a 4440 with, again, I mean, it's got 8,500 hours, and the overhaul definitely worth some dough, but man. And then the pickup, they had an 06 GMC Sierra 3500 regular cab, 6.6 Duramax diesel dually, just under 107,000 miles at 21,000. So, you know, good use pickups, good use tractors. If you happen to have a stash of them in your barn, you're not tied to emotionally and you're willing to sell, you're going to have a super Christmas. I'll just say that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And if you've got a combine, it looks to me like, you probably have a pretty good Christmas too if you put that thing up on for sale right now.
Yeah, well, just let's talk some examples from last week. Right before I hopped on live here with you, Chip, I just posted to Facebook and Twitter a post about a 19 model Gleaner S97 sold on Big Iron last Wednesday. Came out of Moscow, Kansas. 289 engine hours, so 2 years old, like new. But it brought $307,250.
My gosh!
Now I get half the people will say, "Well, that's really cheap because the new price." But cold hard fact, folks, that is the highest auction price I've ever seen on a Gleaner by a mile. So $307,250 there. Then the next day, last Thursday, back to that Schrader auction we were talking about before out of Michigan. Mm-hmm. How about this one? They had a 13 model John Deere S670, 963 engine hours. Again, bear in mind, this is a consignment auction. Okay. That brought $240,000, which is the highest auction price this year on a S670. And Chip, when I did the same thing and looked at average auction price on an S670 this year, up 11.1%.
Okay.
Now, an S670... I mean, they were made from 12 to 17, so we're saying a 4 to 9 year old combine is up 11% hard cash money.
Wow!
At 32 years I've been doing this, I've not seen that. So, and two other examples on the sale Thursday in Michigan, they had a 9670 Deere 10 model, just over 1900 engine hours at 110, and the average auction price on a 9670 is up 8.6 this year, just under 86,000. And then for you New Holland fans, those yellow combines, how about a TR99 with 1,824 engine hours sold for $45,000 and second highest hard cash auction price in 8 years? And the only one higher was just 6 weeks ago. Oh. A Big Iron sale out of Nebraska. They had one at $48,000. So good use combines going up too.
Crazy. Crazy, man. Okay, what do you got going this week? Another busy week.
Yeah, another busy week, indicative by our friends at the Steffes Group. Check it out, folks, steffesgroup.com. They got a hay auction tomorrow in Litchfield, Minnesota. Those are quite interesting these days as well. And then two good farm land sales and five machinery auctions coming this week. And I did see two of them tomorrow. One's a truck and transportation auction out of Mount Pleasant, Iowa. So if you need a good truck, like they got a 13 model Mack CXU 613, 751,000 miles. Then they also have a construction sale tomorrow with a nice excavator. They've been red hot as well. Yeah. 2012 John Deere 50D with about 2,347 hours, 24 inch bucket. So a couple good sales there. Check it out, steffesgroup.com, folks.
Yeah. All right. You've got another auction coming up online too, right?
Yeah, we've got a couple big year enders coming up Tuesday, November 23rd, right before Thanksgiving, and then Tuesday, December 21st. So folks, if you got anything to sell, give us a call. We can hook you up and get it listed and get it promoted, help you move that piece of iron before year end.
That's awesome. Good stuff, Greg. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds great.
All right. That is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. When we come back, have a conversation with Todd Wilkinson, VP of NCBA.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. Beege, it's another big week for the grain markets. We get the production report. We get a supply and demand update tomorrow. In front of it, corn's got a little bit of strength in it today.
A little bit, Chip. It's trading to the upside. Soybeans are trading to the downside. We saw corrective buying or a little bit of strength through the overnight session. And like you said, that's continuing in corn. But the beans just haven't seen any follow through. I wouldn't read too much into this. This is just pre-report positioning and stuff like that. And the expectation is that the soybean crop is going to get bigger on a bigger yield, and the corn is expected to be just a little bit smaller than what it was last month on a little bit lesser yield. So I think that that's the bulk of the trade so far this morning.
All right. Okay. Gotcha. Mixed trade in the wheat.
Yeah. Once again, just, waiting. We know that the 2021 crop was smaller than what was anticipated. We got that on September 30th. That'll carry through and bring down carryover for the 21-22 right. marketing year. It's just a matter of how much it comes down at this point.
Gotcha. Some pressure on hogs.
Yeah. Just continue to pull back from that post hogs and pigs report reaction high. Now, interestingly enough, we did enter the September 27th gap, and that's the initial day after the hogs and pigs report where we gapped sharply higher and left that big gap on the chart. So entered it, didn't find any follow through, and have come off those lows, but still trading to the downside. And then the cattle market started out weaker this morning, but has rebounded a little bit to trade with a slightly firmer tone here mid-morning.
Yeah, very slightly firmer tone. All right, thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. And Davis,
yes, sir.
We have been obviously talking about what's going on in the cattle markets with the arguably the lack of transparency in some cases, arguably the roadblock of that flow of money from the retailer down to the feed yard being right there at the packer station. We've talked about that and documented it here on AgriTalk. Last week, there was a hearing at the House Ag Committee. Chuck Grassley was one of the provided testimony. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack also spoke, and so did Todd Wilkinson. He is the VP of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and he joins us right now. Todd, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Well, doing pretty good. I got the cattle weaned over the weekend, so things are looking up.
Amen to that. Good deal. Good deal. Got a little noisy around your place for a while?
Yeah, that's out to my son's place, so he's got to put up with it.
It's a good place for him. Good place. Tell us about your operation.
Well, I'm in a cow-calf operation with my son, and then we have a feedlot operation and a backgrounding operation here in South Dakota.
Okay. And this I find interesting. You're also a lawyer. You focus on estate planning and ag law. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, estate planning pretty heavily in the ag sector. So
right.
Being from rural South Dakota, you know, that's kind of what you deal with.
Right. So it puts you in a rather unique position. You've seen a lot of the details of several operations. You've helped farmers and ranchers face some legal challenges. You've dealt with some extremely complex issues. So how does this cattle pricing and transparency issue stack up on your complexity scale?
Well, certainly price discovery and transparency has been an issue with the cattle market for quite a while, and it seems to be getting more and more complicated and more of a true problem to get to the bottom line and let producers get some good negotiated trade out there. So coming up to some solutions on this, I think, is critical for the cattle industry going forward.
And the solution is elusive. There's no easy answer to it. But, Todd, I'm picking up a feeling that there's a consensus growing around the idea that if we had more processing capacity, that we'd have a better market.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. If we can get small and regional processing capacity increased, you know, then you just take away the packers' ability to choke down the supply to where they have more of a control of it. And the more competition we have in the marketplace, the better it is for the producer. And then we can go back and put our negotiating hat on and be in a better position to get these markets up to where they truly need to be.
Do you think more capacity automatically leads to more negotiated trade?
Yes, I do think more capacity will lead to more negotiated trade. Of course, the difficulty with capacity is it simply takes a while to build new plants for them to get capitalized. But, you know, as much as I am always skeptical of what the government does, the fact that we've had an announcement for $500 million and then another one last week for another $100 million, as long as they give that money to the small and medium size outfits and don't get it to the four big packers, mm-hmm. I'm encouraged that that is going to put us back in a position that you can certainly remember back in 2014 going into 15.
Yeah. The thing that, and I don't know, maybe it's because I worry about things too much here, Todd, but it concerns me that we might be pointing our capacity up at the same time that we're pointing our cattle numbers down. Does that concern you at all?
Well, it does. I mean, I think the last thing anyone wants to do is see a new feeding facility, or not a feeding facility, a packer capacity get built, yep. And then only have it fail. I mean,
right.
You know, because then what we see is more market consolidation, and the last thing that this industry needs is more market consolidation. But I don't believe that just building capacity is the end all to everything. I mean, we still have to push for greater negotiated trade with price discovery. And I'll give the guys credit. I mean, over the last year, we have seen an increase in that price discovery, that negotiated trade. And that's because producers are wanting to make it happen. And
yeah.
Hats off to them.
Yeah. Yeah. one of the recommendations I think that came out of the Senate hearing was it basically asked the Packers to make an effort to increase their negotiated trade. Have we seen anything just over the last 2-3 months that would suggest they're doing that?
Well, the good thing that's happened is we've now got all the information from the four major Packers to be able to build out what NCBA is calling a Packer silo. So we've got that all being reviewed independently. So starting with October when it finishes up, that'll be the first month that we've had a full month's detail on that. We're going to be able to see how much they're participating. And if there's somebody that's not participating, we're going to be able to put their feet to the fire on that issue.
Right, right. You know, I think there's probably a bingo card out there when it comes to these kinds of conversations, Todd. And the free space right in the middle might be unintended consequences, because it seems like we're always talking about the risk of unintended consequences if government tries to legislate something. What do you think the risks are that Congress is going to do something just for the sake of doing something?
Well, that's always a big concern anytime the government gets involved in something. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that the unintended consequences, as I testified last week, I'm concerned that Congress tries to shoot a bullet at the Packers, but intend it's going to hit the feeders, and then all of a sudden the feeders are going to be limited on how they can market their cattle, because the Packers says, hey, I've got a quota I got to fill, and I don't need your cattle this way, so you can go try and get a bid from somebody else. I mean, that can be a pretty tough situation at any point in trying to constantly get bids. If we give them another arrow or arrow to put in their quiver, so to speak, that they can say to that independent feed yard, well, I've got to meet the government's mandate this month. That's a big concern, Chip, and it truly is. I don't want somebody telling me how I'm going to market my cattle.
Right.
I want to be able to market my cattle, and that's the bottom line.
Right, okay. I got to go back to the processing capacity for a moment, because, Todd, does 500 head a week make a difference? Does it need to be 1,000, 15, 5,000? What's the number?
So the study that was done on that was 5,700. So, you know, ooh, take a plant the size of Holcomb or something like that. You know, if you combine the facilities that are going to be coming online in the next year and a half to 2 years, if we get 5,700, that's 1.5 million head of cattle. That's the number that they say that we need to get back to put the feeder back in the driver's seat. And, you know, I'd love to be able to go back and be able to hold my cattle and force some higher prices.
Right, right. Now, it sounds like you're a fan of negotiated sales.
I am, and I live in an area where I regularly use them.
Right. It doesn't mean you're against the AMAs, does it?
No, in fact, I use AMAs. I mean, I've got some cattle that are slotted to go out. Some of our steers are going out in January, and they're under a deal with a major market. And you know, I'm glad I did them. I got a pretty good price over the board on January, and back at the time when the board was looking up a little bit.
Yep. Is part of the frustration in this marketplace just the idea that all the details of those AMAs, the alternative marketing agreements, all the details just aren't known? Do we need a library?
Yeah, there is no question we need a library. Now, somebody's not going to be able to learn from that library, you know, that Wilkinson Livestock sold for X. But I'm going to be able to learn what my competition generally is doing, what's out there. You know, and the pork guys have had this. I mean, it's not a new concept. and they've been pretty successful with it. So just give us the same tools.
Yeah, yeah. Do you share any of the quality concerns that if we would move to too many negotiated, that we get away from the quality incentives?
You mean that we're going to take away from the
quality of the beef?
Higher. Yeah, the quieter. Yeah. I don't think anybody wants to sell their cattle as commodity cattle,
right.
At least not in my neck of the woods. And I think as long as we have the negotiated trade is out there, I'm still in the driver's seat, right, with that negotiated trade. I can choose to take it or not choose to take it.
Gotcha. Todd, we are out of time, but thank you so much. I'm looking forward to our next conversation. Todd Wilkinson, NCBA.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Good morning. Good Monday morning to us all.
Yeah.
Davis Michelson here. Chip Flory as well.
Yep.
This morning we've spoken with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson himself, and then Todd Wilkinson, VP of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Right off the top here, Chip, for our non-cattle people, Wilkinson used a term that I feel like I might have a handle on, but I don't know. So I'm just
going to ask you,
he used the term commodity cattle.
Oh, okay.
He said, you know, the comment, I think you asked him something about, you know, premium cuts and premium beef and all that stuff. And he's like,
right.
Yeah, most guys, he said specifically himself, I don't want to just sell commodity cattle. Right. I don't know what that is.
Okay. Part of the reason the AMAs were developed was to give incentive to increase the quality of the beef that these animals were producing.
Okay.
And one of the originals was the grid. So how many are grade and choice? How many are grade and prime? How many are grade and select? How many are grade? And then the grading, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So where do they land on that grid was determining what those cattle were worth. Okay. Don Close at Rabobank, who we've talked about, you know, the transparency issues with on the show before, has basically said, ideally, the way the ultimate result is if every carcass would be sold on quality basis. So how good it is.
Okay.
Now, there was a time that if I was feeding cattle in Oklahoma, and I'm just saying it, down in Oklahoma versus feeding cattle in Northwest Iowa. There was a time that those cattle, if they went to the same packer, would bring the same money on that day. Even though those cattle down in Oklahoma might have some ear, might not have as much quality beef to them, just all that, versus the Angus-based animals up in Northwest Iowa that were higher quality in the meat case. Mm-hmm. But because it was average pricing, those were the commodity cattle days.
Okay.
So in other words, a kernel of corn is a kernel of corn, right? Well,
right. Not so
in
much.
That case, a beef is a beef.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when they set up these AMAs, what is it? Alternative marketing arrangement? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Agreements.
I'm just curious about the process. Does the guy sign up? Okay, bring you 10, you know, whatever of this grade and 10 of that grade and that grade. And then you've got to provide those animals, or is it that they're judged on the back end? Okay. Looks like we got 10, you know, really good ones here, 10 medium and 10 not so good.
They're judged on the back end.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just horribly illiterate about the cattle market.
And that's,
so I'm learning.
That's really important because the industry back in the 80s, you know, quite honestly, when I was still showing cattle in 4-H, you know, we had a commercial herd. My dad and brother and I had a commercial cow herd, and I was very active, okay, very active in beef through 4-H. But the cattle that I took from the herd to the fair didn't look anything like the animals that were winning. Okay. What were winning were racehorses is what they look like. Tall, long, lean, kind of cylindrical.
Like newsman and cattle, I would call them.
The like what? The newsman.
Newsman cattle. Yes. A lot like me.
Right. Right. I think that was a breed name that they were considering, I think. Yeah. Versus the shorter, the stockier, the finished choice cattle that we were producing out of our herd. Well,
yeah.
I mean, one of the great examples of this was I had a steer, one of the best steers I ever raised. He stood like fourth or fifth in his class at the county fair, and this was a big county fair, Jones County, Iowa. We'd have 500 market animals at this fair. Seriously, 500 market animals at a county fair. He was fourth or fifth in his class, but there was an open steer show after that called the Fat Steer Show, and it was judged by packers. And that steer went from the fourth or fifth in his class into that Fat Steer Show and won it. Okay?
Interesting.
So it was a different animal, what the packer was looking for versus what – well, the whole industry went through an evaluation and started listening to consumers who were telling them, you know what we'd really like? Something that tastes good. Something that's tender. Something that is, you know, makes me happy when it's on the plate. I'm not too sure if we're getting that out of the meat case with everything select and, you know, low fat. And it's like you mentioned last week. Not all fats are bad, and you can get some good fats out of beef. So that the whole industry went through an evaluation in the 80s, and part of one of the results of that evaluation was we need to do something in the market to encourage, incentivize higher quality beef,
well,
AMAs.
And speaking of unintended consequences, that did, as I understand it, was also the death of the cattle racing tracks. You can't go to the track and see cattle race anymore. They just don't raise race cattle anymore.
Ah, it was PETA. PETA got in the way of that too.
I'm here to
can't
tell you
that.
I'm here to tell you. One more quick thing. Interesting note here. Todd was the first cattle guy that I've heard coveting some of the hog marketing fundamentals, and maybe we can talk more about that a little bit later.
We
Not
can.
All of them, but the library of AMAs was one particular point.
Exactly. They've got it available in the hog industry. Doesn't mean that you can execute them all, but at least you know what guys are doing. And that's what the cattle guys want. They want that library of what the marketing alternatives are available. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Thanks to all the guests. Come back this afternoon. Jerry Goodell from Midwest Market Research is going to be on to get us ready for tomorrow's report. Looking forward to that. 206 Central.